Welcome to the deep dive. Today we're doing something a little different.
Oh.
Yeah, we're diving into biblical texts, but with a twist.
Okay.
We're uncovering the history woven into them.
Okay.
Think of it like an archaeological dig,
Mm-hmm.
where we're brushing away the dust of time
Right.
to reveal fascinating insights about the text itself.
Like what?
Well, like who wrote it, when, why,
Oh, okay.
but also the historical world behind the text.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting.
It's like having a backstage pass to some of the most well-known stories.
Exactly.
We get to peek behind the curtain,
Yes.
understand the historical stage on which these narratives were first performed.
You'll be surprised how much these hidden histories can enrich your understanding.
Yeah, for sure.
For instance,
Okay.
we're going to tackle the book of Colossians.
Right.
Now, most scholars agree that Paul wrote it,
They do.
but the exact reason he wrote it is a bit of a puzzle.
That's right.
Yeah, there's a lively debate about whether he was responding to a specific dangerous teaching that was threatening the Colossian church or addressing more general pressures faced by early Christians.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
To get a sense of what might have been going on,
Okay.
let's look at a passage from Colossians chapter 2
All right.
in verses 8 and 16 through 23.
Okay.
Paul seems to be pushing back against something.
Let's hear it.
Okay, so Paul says, "See to it that no one takes you captive through hollow and deceptive philosophy, which depends on human tradition and the elemental spirits of the world rather than on Christ."
Wow.
And then a bit later,
Okay.
he warns, "Therefore, do not let anyone judge you by what you eat or drink,
Okay.
or with regard to a religious festival, a new moon celebration, or a Sabbath day.
Interesting.
These are a shadow of the things that were to come. The reality is found in Christ." And it goes on.
Wow.
He mentions false humility and the worship of angels. There's definitely some tension brewing here, right?
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
For a long time, scholars have been trying to pinpoint the exact nature of this concerning teaching that Paul is addressing
Right.
early on.
Yeah.
Some thought it might be Gnosticism, but Gnosticism as a fully developed system
Right.
didn't really emerge until later.
I see.
Others have suggested it could be Stoicism or perhaps a blend of Jewish and Greco-Roman ideas
Oh, okay.
that in some way were diminishing the centrality of Christ.
So like a theological mix and match that wasn't sitting well with Paul.
Precisely.
Okay.
But there's another more recent theory that I find particularly fascinating.
Oh, tell me more.
And it has to do with Jewish mysticism.
Okay.
You see, we sometimes forget that Judaism in the first century was remarkably diverse. It wasn't monolithic.
Right.
There are all sorts of different groups
Yeah.
with their own interpretations and practices.
I'm all ears. Tell me more about this Jewish mysticism angle.
Well, this particular teaching that Paul might be grappling with could align with what's known as apocalyptic or Merkabah Judaism.
All right.
This branch of Judaism
Yeah.
was known for its visionary experiences,
Interesting.
like mystical ascents through the heavens and
Wow.
encounters with angels.
That sounds pretty intense.
It was.
Yeah.
They're also known for their strict adherence to Jewish law,
Oh.
including dietary regulations. Now, does that sound familiar?
It does.
Remember Paul warning the Colossians not to let anyone judge them by what they eat or drink?
Yeah, interesting. But how do we know Paul was specifically dealing with this kind of Judaism in Colossians?
Well, we can't be absolutely certain,
Okay.
but there are some intriguing clues.
All right.
And one of the most fascinating parallels we find is in the Dead Sea
Oh,
Scrolls.
absolutely.
You've probably heard of them.
Everyone loves a good Dead Sea Scrolls mystery.
Well, in some of those texts,
Yeah.
we find phrases and ideas that echo what we see in Colossians. Like what?
For example,
Okay.
the phrase festivals, new moons, and Sabbaths
Right.
appears in both Colossians and the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Okay. I see the connection there. It's
Yeah.
like they're using the same language. Anything else?
There's more.
Oh.
In the Dead Sea Scrolls, there's a requirement for new members to abstain from certain foods and drinks
Interesting.
during a time of judgment,
Huh.
which resonates with Paul's warnings in Colossians.
Okay.
And then there are the Dead Sea Scroll texts called the Songs of the Sabbath Sacrifice.
What?
These describe heavenly worship, which might connect with that worship of angels mentioned in Colossians.
Wow, those are some pretty striking
They
similarities.
are.
Yeah.
But one example truly stands out.
Oh.
There's a Dead Sea Scroll text known as 4Q491, where a figure describes their ascent to heaven and the incredible things they witnessed.
Oh.
It almost mirrors the language in Colossians 2.18, where Paul talks about someone who goes into great detail about what he has seen. So does this clinch it. Are the Dead Sea Scrolls the key to unlocking the Colossians puzzle?
Hold on a second.
Okay.
As tempting as it is to draw a direct line, we need to be cautious.
Right.
While the parallels with the Dead Sea Scrolls are fascinating, they don't provide definitive proof.
So it's more of a strong lead than a slam dunk case.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
It's entirely possible that the group Paul was addressing in Colossians held beliefs that were similar to those found in the Dead Sea Scrolls, but weren't necessarily identical.
Okay.
There's also another layer to consider.
What's that?
Some scholars suggest that Paul's emphasis on Christ throughout Colossians might not be a direct refutation of the specific teachings themselves, but rather a proactive way of guarding against the potential dangers these teachings posed.
I see.
It's like he's reinforcing the foundation of their faith, ensuring Christ remains at the center.
That makes a lot of sense.
It does.
So even if we can't pinpoint the exact nature of the false teaching with absolute certainty, we can see how Paul is using his letter to fortify the Colossian church's understanding of who Christ is and what that means for their lives.
That's a great way to put it.
And it highlights why understanding the historical context is so crucial.
It is.
It illuminates the author's intentions.
Yeah.
And deepens our appreciation for the text.
Well, this has been a fascinating look at the historical backdrop of Colossians.
It has.
But our deep dive into biblical history doesn't stop there.
Oh, what else you got?
Okay.
Now that we've explored the historical context behind a specific book, let's shift gears and explore how cultural clues hidden within familiar parables can radically change your understanding of those stories.
I'm ready for it. Okay, so we've been talking about the history behind the text, but now let's dive into some examples of the history within the text.
I like it.
Those subtle details that can completely shift our understanding of familiar Bible stories.
Okay.
Ready for this? Absolutely. I love how these seemingly small details can unlock whole new layers of meaning.
Me too. And one of the best examples is the term Samaritan.
Right.
We can't just read that word as if it's some neutral descriptor.
We can't.
We have to understand the historical baggage that came with it, the centuries of conflict and prejudice that it represented.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
In Jesus's time, Samaritan wasn't just a geographical label.
Right.
It was a loaded term.
Oh, yeah.
Carrying all sorts of social and religious implications.
So let's break that down for our listeners.
Okay.
Where did this animosity towards Samaritans come from?
Well, it goes back centuries to the time when the northern kingdom of Israel, which had its capital in Samaria, was conquered by the Assyrians.
Okay.
Many of the Israelites were deported, but some remained and intermarried with the foreigners who moved into the region.
So the Samaritans were seen as a mixed race.
Yeah.
Not pure Israelites.
Right.
In the eyes of the Jews who returned from exile.
Exactly.
And that's where the trouble really started.
It is.
The Jews who returned from exile viewed the Samaritans as religiously and ethnically compromised.
Right.
There were religious disputes, too.
Yeah.
The Samaritans had their own version of the Torah. And their own temple on Mount Gerizim.
Oh, wow.
Which the Jews considered illegitimate.
Right.
So you can imagine the shockwaves.
I can.
When Jesus not only interacted with a Samaritan woman, but also made a Samaritan the hero of his parable.
Wow. Yeah. If we're going to understand these stories, we have to put ourselves in the sandals of the original audience, right?
Right.
What would it have felt like for them to hear Jesus say these things?
Precisely.
It would have been incredibly provocative.
Oh, yeah.
Even subversive.
Yeah.
To fully grasp the impact.
Wow.
We need to find a modern day equivalent that carries the same level of cultural weight. Imagine a story where someone who is traditionally marginalized or ostracized.
Yeah.
Someone from a group that has faced intense prejudice is suddenly portrayed as the ultimate example of compassion and righteousness.
Okay, yeah. Now I'm really starting to see how radical Jesus's actions were.
Absolutely.
He wasn't just telling a nice story.
No.
He was turning their world upside down.
Absolutely.
And it's a powerful reminder that God's love and grace extend to everyone.
Yes.
Regardless of their background or social standing.
It makes you wonder how many other seemingly simple stories in the Bible are packed with this kind of explosive cultural significance.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, there's another parable that comes to mind.
What's that?
The prodigal son.
Oh, yeah. One of those stories that everyone thinks they know.
Right.
But when you start digging into the historical context, it takes on a whole new meaning.
Oh, I completely agree.
For example, there's that moment at the beginning where the younger son demands his inheritance from his father while he's still alive.
Right.
We might read that and just think, wow, that's a bit rude. Mm-hmm. But there's so much more to it than that.
Right. In the first century, it wasn't just rude. It was a grave insult.
Wow.
Almost like wishing your father dead.
Really?
Because you wouldn't normally receive your inheritance until after your father died.
Right.
So the son is essentially saying, I can't wait for you to be gone. Give me my money now.
So he's not just asking for his share.
Nope.
He's rejecting his father and the entire family structure.
Exactly.
Okay, wow.
And then there's the father's reaction, which is equally shocking when you understand the cultural context.
You mean when he runs to meet his son?
Yes.
I've always found that scene so heartwarming.
It is heartwarming.
Yeah.
But we have to remember that in that culture, running was considered deeply undignified, especially for an older man who was supposed to be respected and composed.
Okay.
Imagine this.
Right.
You're in a bustling village, and everyone is watching as this prominent elderly father humiliates himself by running towards his wayward son.
Wow.
It would have been a major social faux pas, a complete breach of decorum.
So the father isn't just welcoming his son back.
Right.
He's defying social norms to do it.
Yeah.
He's willing to risk his reputation and social standing.
He is.
Because his love for his son is that powerful.
Exactly. It's a breathtaking image of grace and forgiveness.
Wow.
And it's a reminder that God's love for us isn't bound by our social conventions or expectations. He pursues us with a radical, relentless love that knows no bounds.
This is incredible. It's like we've been reading these stories with one eye closed. And now we're finally seeing them in all their depth and complexity.
And that's the beauty of exploring the historical context.
Oh, right, right.
It illuminates the nuances, the cultural cues, the unspoken assumptions that we might otherwise miss.
It's like having a backstage pass to the world of the Bible.
I love that analogy.
Yeah.
It captured the essence of what we're doing here.
Getting to see how the stage is set, the costumes, the lighting, it completely changes the way you experience the performance.
So what you're saying is we can't just read the Bible as if it's a timeless story floating in a vacuum.
We can't.
We have to ground it in history.
Right.
Understand the cultural landscape, the social dynamics, the political realities of the time.
Absolutely. And when we do that.
Yeah.
Those ancient texts come alive in a whole new way.
They do.
They speak to us across the centuries with a power and relevance that we might never have imagined.
It's true.
I don't know about you, but I'm feeling like I need to go back and reread some of these familiar stories with fresh eyes.
Yeah.
It's amazing how a little historical context can completely change your perspective, isn't it?
It really is.
Yeah. And that's the power of this kind of deep dive.
It is.
It reminds us that the Bible isn't just some ancient text.
Yeah, right.
It's a living document that speaks to us across the centuries.
Yeah.
But to truly hear its message, we need to understand the world in which it was written.
It's like we've been watching a movie in black and white.
Yeah.
And now we're seeing it in full color for the first time.
I know, right? It's crazy.
All those subtle nuances, all those cultural cues that we might have missed before suddenly pop into focus.
What's fascinating is that this isn't just about uncovering historical facts.
It isn't.
It's about gaining a deeper appreciation for the richness and complexity of these texts.
Exactly. And it makes you realize that there's always more to learn.
Oh, for sure.
Always another layer to uncover.
We've just scratched the surface today, haven't we?
We have. And that's what makes exploring the Bible so exciting.
I know it is.
It's a journey of discovery that never ends.
Well, folks.
Yeah.
There you have it.
We did it.
A whirlwind tour through the hidden histories of the Bible.
That's right.
We've tackled authorship mysteries.
We did.
Decoded cultural clues.
Uh-huh.
And uncovered those surprising plot twists.
Right.
That reveal the true depth and richness of these ancient texts.
I hope this deep dive has inspired you to approach the Bible with a renewed sense of curiosity and wonder.
And don't forget
that
historical context is key.
So true.
So the next time you're reading a familiar Bible story, ask yourself, what was going on in the world back then?
Right.
What were the cultural norms?
Mm-hmm.
What were the unspoken assumptions?
It's a great question.
You might be surprised at what you discover.
Who knows?
Yeah.
You might even uncover some hidden treasures of your own.
Thanks for joining us on this incredible journey.
It was fun.
Until next time, keep digging deeper.